Thank you. Okay. My daughter balanced on the edge of the swimming pool, knowing full well aware of the no jumping sign behind her. So she walked, not jumped, into the pool. A laugh was heard from another little girl, and boom, a connection made. They were friends the whole day. We've all turning off a mic by shaking. So that one connection, boom, it happens. Like Steve said, I'm a mother and a teacher, and I'm much more comfortable in a room full of two-year-olds than a crowd of people wanting to hear about laughter. Oh, God, they were so good earlier, weren't they? Man. So why am I here? Okay, the picture. I'm here because I was born into a, Well, I'm here because of the person that you're going to see. It's my grandmother and I, and it's her son, so my father. So my dad was a 1950s surfer. He was the class clown. He was an artist, and he had a pet boa constrictor named Dorothy. So that's my, So my dad was a really outrageous guy, and he was full of life. And at 21, he married my conservative Catholic mother. And soon after, they began procreating, as you do. And so he had to become normal. My dad had to adjust his life and needed to become normal and to support his growing family. And that's when he got a regular job and ascended the ladder. And he worked, and we moved from place to place, cul-de-sac to cul-de-sac, after every promotion. And this man worked 60 hours a week. But when he was home, the floor was poison. Water fights happened inside the house, and nothing was ever taken seriously. During this time, my family and I, we watched a lot of TV. And my brothers and sisters would laugh at the mouse and the cat hurting each other on television. I was horrified. I didn't get it. So my first act of consciously conforming was to time my laughs to my brother and my sister and to the laugh tracks that played in the sitcoms in my house 24/7. So at an early age, I wondered what everybody was laughing about. Some people wondered about dinosaurs and death and everything else, but I wanted to know why people were laughing. This is us in the 1970s, as you see, and we were the family with the first VCR. So we got this VCR, and the first thing we taped was the movie of the week in 1975. Nobody would know it, but it was Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and that was it. We were now the Monty Python family. Monty Python was our new church. John Cleese was our new priest. Our status within the family was determined on our ability to recite the script word for word. It infiltrated every aspect of our life. If we were in trouble, we begged to burn them. If we talked about the Easter Bunny, we had to mention it had very sharp teeth. Every doorway was a non-shall pass, and knee, knee, knee rang out throughout the neighborhood. It united us. It gave me a sense of belonging, or Manu Fanua, which is the early childhood education. It's recognized as a basic human need. So we all need to feel like we belong. So I have my life in little different things. So then there's the Life of Brian period. So when the time Life of Brian came out, we were very excited. It came out as I entered puberty. My siblings and I hosted Monty Python film festivals with scripts. So we had to type out the scripts. And I would pause the thing as my brother typed every single word, and we would hand them out to everybody. And this, it was a very popular event. So we became, this was our seventh school because we moved around so much. So it gave us a bigger sense of belonging within the community, all because of Monty Python. But it was met with mixed reviews from my deeply religious family. So the trip home from Sunday Mass started to become a little more argumentative. We'd have heated debates. And I learned then that laughter can unite, but it could also divide. This was also evident in my parents' changing relationship, because I learned that insults, cleverly worded and delivered in lighthearted tones, were passed off as sarcasm. So their pet names for each other morphed into things like pig lips and fat ass, and they reassured me that they were just kidding, but I wasn't so sure. And at school, you know, the same thing. I had a popular football player guy named Steve Everard, who liked to call himself Steve Everhard because he was 12 or 13. And he would yell things randomly to me to make his friends laugh for fun. And so one time he just yelled out randomly, he said, "Hey Kim, if those moles are beauty marks, they're not working." And I still felt that this year, as I had melanoma carved from me, I still hear his voice. And then I learned, because a couple weeks later after he did that, he also yelled, "Hey Kim, do you know it's physically impossible to fuck yourself?" And then I finally went back and said, "How long did it take you to figure that out, Steve?" And then his friends laughed, and you know, things settled down. And I didn't like that. I knew that you could use humor in that way, but it didn't feel good to me. It felt hardened. I spent some time at my friend Katie's house, and her house was much different than mine. She lived in the country. Her mom baked bread. Her dad played the fiddle. And I was laughing at somebody or something, and he calmly mentioned, he said, you really shouldn't make fun of the misfortunes of others. And I thought, what do you mean? You're supposed to make fun of the misfortunes of others. And so that got me thinking, next Veda. I thought a lot about the golden rule, and the golden rule is treat people like they want to be treated. But some people like teasing, and some people don't like teasing. So I thought, this rule is actually a bit insufficient. So there's a platinum rule, which is to treat people like they want to be treated. And this takes a little more thought and consideration. So, I stopped laughing at the laugh tracks, and by the end of my life at Brian's stage, my altar boy brother was an atheist, I was the poster girl of political correctness, and my parents lived in different states. And then The Meaning of Life came along, and this was released perfectly as I was leaving to university. As a person from the Every Sperm is Sacred lineage, I appreciated the birth control advice from the Protestant. I still haven't found a French tickler anywhere, so. It addressed the modern day issues that challenge the current attitudes towards birth, life, death, afterlife. Unlike the other movies that made fun of history, The Meaning of Life made fun of us, present day, so it taught me to laugh at myself. I studied education and psychology to help answer the question of why people laugh at different things. And this is what I learned. Some of the things that people mentioned before, like conditioning and culture, that play a big part. Next photo. The biggest thing is the different temperaments. I hope you all know your Myers-Briggs score. So I'm like, go check it, it's really cool. So a lot of different developmental theorists, even Steiner, they have all of these different temperament scales, and they usually come down to how you interpret or interact with the world. So there's four basic ways. It's either through socially, emotionally, physically, or intellectually. So obviously, how you interact with the world is going to affect what you think is funny, what you don't think is funny. This is when I realized I was a bit sensitive. So, with all the different things, Brian in The Life of Brian was right. We are all individuals. We are all different. There you go, thank you. Lastly, I learned that humans, we place far more energy on negativity than positivity. And I think this will surprise you. So for every negative review on Amazon, it takes 5 positive reviews. And Dr. John Gottman does a study on relationships. And so he checks and he looks at the behavior between two people. And there has to be 5 positive interactions to every negative interaction, or they test later and they're usually divorced. So you would think it would be even, but it's not. Time and time again, this 5-to-1 ratio, 5-to-1 ratio with positivity. So it's important to be aware of that. And sarcasm can fall in the negative, but humor can fall in the positive. So just to be careful about it. Even my funny father learned to alter his ratio, and my parents live again together peacefully. But he still managed to keep his sense of humor. Recently, he had his hernia removed, and when he woke up, the nurse assured him, "Mr. Moore, the procedure went great." And he said, "Mr. Moore, I'm Mr. Johnson." So, he's really sorry. But being from a Monty Python family has its drawbacks, like the permanent urge to ask all surgeons if they have the machine that goes ping. But its gifts are greater. I discovered in the Sri Lanka jungle, as I had just finished some tsunami work, and I was on my way back to the airport, and our driver took us through the shortcut on an abandoned road, and it was full of signs warning us not to stop, because there were armed robbers, and it was commonplace on this route. And I was panicking. And my companion, aware that I was about to have a nervous breakdown, recited the entire and Monty Python spam skit, word for word. And I was just, you know, got me through. It was amazing. So in conclusion, trying to keep to the 9 minutes, laughter is very powerful. It unites, it divides. Laugh at yourself, and if you can't do that, laugh at the universe, because the universe has the best sense of humor of all. Like the fact that I dislike math, and I've spent a decade developing a math program. And how the universe has paired up the silliest of men with one of the most sensitive daughters. And when I get too serious, I simply remember that I'm standing on a planet that's evolving and revolving at 900 miles an hour. It's orbiting at 19 miles a second, so it's reckoned, a sun that is the source of all our power. Everybody. Where's the next one? Come on, you don't know this by heart? The self keeps on expanding and expanding in all directions that it can whiz. The light, you know, 12 million miles a minute, that's the fastest speed there is. So remember when you're feeling very small and insecure, how amazingly unlikely is your birth. And pray that there's intelligent life somewhere up in space, because it's bugger all down here on Earth. Okay. Thank you for letting me share my story.
Peter Forster is a man of many interests and passions. I first meet Peter in Waiheke's V12 All Men's Choir. He has worked in dental technology for many years and has also worked as a musician, composer, sound healer, seminar leader, and musical instrument builder. From all his varied experience and deep interest in life's mystery, Peter will share his personal take on the vital role of laughter in a healthy life. What we love about Peter is his creativity, his composing and singing, and his beautiful, empathetic nature. Peter Forster.
That guy sounds good. I'd like to meet him. Where is he? Yeah. So, as you said, I've had many interests, and music has always been a passion of mine. Sound, vibration, and laughter has always been a big part of my life. I too come from a family of everyone laughed. Not much sadness has shown, but everyone laughed. So, I'd like to talk about laughter tonight. And when I was invited to come and do this talk, I really had to go deep inside myself and wonder, what does laughter mean in my life? So I took this kind of journey deep inside myself. Ooh. And it's kind of weird. And I didn't find any answers, but I'm going to explore some of those ideas. I'm used to standing on stage with a guitar in front of me, so this, I feel really naked at the moment, you know, with nothing in front of my private parts. It's like that feeling when you have a dream and you haven't got any trousers on in front of a big audience. Oh shit, I remembered. So, yeah, the inner voyage, laughter, where does it come from? At New Year, I had probably one of the most joyful experiences of my life, and I was doing the dishes. Dishes are really joyful. I didn't know this at the time, but I'm standing there at the sink in my kitchen, and dum-de-dum-de-doo, bubbles, bubbles popping, dum-de-doo, oh, dish, dum-de-dum-dum, dishes. And then all of a sudden, well, I can say all of a sudden, the bubbles just seemed the most miraculous thing in the world. There was like, popping and, yum. And then, the water was amazing, and then the dishes were amazing, and then, I love dishes. And, the sink bench was amazing. Everything was just incredibly beautiful. Everything was just vibrating with kind of a joy and like, my God. And I started laughing, much like those people in the village. And I could not stop laughing for 30 minutes. Just oh God, look at this. I couldn't believe it. I thought I'd lost my mind. And I was on the carpet, rolling on the floor. Laughter. Lovely carpet. Oh, love you, carpet. Oh, I love me. Everything. Whew. And eventually it faded down. But the feeling stayed with me for at least a week or more. And then I slipped back into this kind of regular, life's a bit tough. Yeah, whatever. So, I have a good friend who measures her day by how many times she laughs during the day. And I think that's a pretty good barometer. And if I go through the morning, I think, oh my God, I've only laughed twice today. I know my day's been a bit slack. But you look at children, and children are these amazing laughing beings. And it's been proven, they've measured children's laughs. They laugh hundreds of times a day. And that was us, you know, a few years ago. That was us. We all know how to laugh, and somehow as we grow older, that just kind of gets, we lose that a little bit. So it's magical to be able to rediscover your inner child, the joy that wants to come out. Because we're still kids in big bodies, right? I lived in Sweden for many years, and there I did the music to accompany a bunch of handicapped people who were doing a show. And it was the most magical thing ever, because they just had this amazing laughter all the time. And these so-called handicapped people were the happiest people I'd ever met. They're just walking around the stage, everything was great, fall over, boof, lovely. You know, nothing was bad. Like children, handicapped. And then I thought, who's the handicapped person here? I think it was me. I was sitting there playing my music. Yeah, I felt like the handicapped one. So anyway, I'm on my inner journey, and I'm going through going, what does laughter mean, and where is it? And it's like joy that's below the surface. It's like this little golden thread that we can just tap into sometimes, and you just need to find it. And sometimes it seems like it's not there, you're so sad, but laughter is always there waiting. As we've often said, studies show, I don't know who these studies are, but studies show that it releases endorphins in the body, and it's a very healing, beautiful thing. And certainly when I laugh, I can feel that vibrancy, something of the bubbles in the dishes, it comes back. When I was in Sweden, I was running workshops on freeing the natural voice, and it involved a lot of groaning and moaning, basically, as you're well aware of. So there'd be lots of, oh, Oh, yeah, baby. This kind of thing. And it's all about getting that sound vibrating down into your lower chakras and really loosening up the throat and getting down with your sound, getting down. That's how my voice got so deep, you see. And it's true, you do this stuff and your voice expands up and down. It grows in different ways. So what was I talking about? Study, no, not studies. Yes, I was doing workshops and I incorporated laughter. Laughter was a big thing in releasing the voice. Laughter is everything. So I started incorporating some of the techniques that you've been showing where you'd start laughing down low with this deep sound like Santa Claus. Ho 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 ho. And you move up to the heart, which is more of an open R sound. Ha 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 ha. Up to the throat chakra. And then up to the third eye. Up to the crown. Back down. Back to being Santa Claus. Anyway, people apparently like this because they were laughing their heads off. The teaching with humor is a very memorable thing. It really helps things to sink in. Teaching is a thing that really, it just grounds you in whatever you're trying to learn. So on my journey in through laughter, and I also come up against, oh, but then there's sadness and misery. Last night, I came home from work after a long day at work. I work in a dental laboratory and there's all these plaster teeth sitting there looking at me, grinning, you know, like, make me, come on, make my day. Yeah, so anyway, it's an interesting job if you like teeth. So I come home and it's 9 o'clock at night. I've just got off the ferry, I walk in, and I walk up to the same sink where I've been doing the dishes. And all the joy, you know, and I just, last night I felt absolutely, oh. I was just knackered, just really down and, oh. And then I had the thought, where is the joy? Where's the laughter? Where is it? Because I've been thinking about this for weeks now, preparing for this talk. Where's the joy? Where does it come from? And I'm still feeling, oh, looking at the sink. There's none of that laughter rising up. And after maybe 5 minutes of feeling a real weight in my chest of just total tiredness and total, oh, and then suddenly, oh, and I just felt energy just wanted to move. Oh. Oh, and energy moved. And maybe that's all it is. Energy just moves. It just moves through us. Whoosh, gone. Sadness. Oh, God. Oh, Jesus. Oh, it moves through us. Laughter comes back. Oh, amazing stuff. And maybe we don't even do it. It just comes and goes. I don't know. There's a meditation called the Mystic Rose Meditation, which I've never done. But it's a 3-week meditation. And the first week, you laugh for 3 hours a day, every day. So you just full on laugh. And you get rid of all that stuff. And then the second week, you cry for 3 hours a day. Full on. You just cry and cry and cry until you're totally empty. And then the third week, you're sitting in silence. I'd like to do this one day. Sounds good. Maybe I will. Maybe the laughing Buddha knew that life is just a big joke. I think that's the secret. Life is just a big joke. It's like this cosmic joke that we're all living. Wow. Yeah. Everything, sadness, joy. Maybe it's just a big joke. So when I was looking for some inspiration for this talk, I came across a quote from Khalil Gibran in his book, The Prophet. And this, I thought, said something that goes towards what I was thinking about. Your joy is your sorrow unmasked, and the self-same well from which your laughter rises was oftentimes filled with your tears. And how else can it be? The deeper the sorrow that carves your being, the more joy you can contain. Is not the lute that soothes your spirit the very wood that was hollowed with knives? When you are joyous, look deep into your heart, and you shall find it is only that which has given you sorrow that is giving you joy. And when you are sorrowful, look into your heart, and you shall see that in truth you are weeping for that which some of you, for that which has been your delight. Some of you say, joy is greater than sorrow. Others say, nay, sorrow is greater. But I say unto you, they are inseparable. Together they come, and when one sits alone with you at your table, remember the other is asleep upon your bed. Verily, you are suspended like scales between your sorrow and your joy. Only when you are empty are you at standstill and balanced. Yeah, and so I was standing at the sink and I had my hand in the bubbles. Bubbles. Oh my God. Thank you.